Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg. This week I am joined by my sidekick, Ben Daniels, and of course the wily veteran of Wheeler Dealer Radio, Brian Ashlock. Unfortunately, Rob won't join us this week. He is hastily disassembling the Moussa Sissoko news desk, and we appreciate his efforts. Maybe he'll be back next week. As we go into the international break to be really depressed about something. But in the meantime, we have a depressing game to talk about today. Unfortunately, Tottenham lost at home 1-0 to Newcastle United. This was not the result any of us were expecting last week, or I think any Spurs fans anywhere, or probably even Newcastle fans. If you look at this game, I think there is a rational argument as to why we lost. And I'm not saying I subscribe to this, but I want to use it as the start of our conversation. If you look at this game, Ndombele's out. Lo Celso's not fully integrated into the team yet and really is probably not entirely in shape given that he didn't have a real preseason. So our two best passers are out of the team. At the same time, Vertonghen and Eriksen are unsettled or not fit or whatever the hell's going on with them. And on top of all of that, we gift Newcastle a stupid early goal that just allows them to play their game. There is a way of looking at this game where this was a really stupid set of circumstances that all just collided with each other of stupid team selection, guys not being healthy, and just shit not working out in our favor. And when you look at it down the line, as in we're probably going to field stronger midfields as the year goes on, this was probably a stupid game that we won't always see. It was also apparently extremely hot, and I don't know how much that matters. But you could say that this is a really dumb set of circumstances and it just wasn't Spurs Day, even though we didn't play well. Brian, is that a rational way to look at this, or am I just making excuses for Pochettino when I pipe that argument out? Or the team, because it might be broader issues than just Pochettino.
I mean, that is a way to look at it, or you could look at it about how this is all Daniel Levy's fault for doing all our transfer business at the last minute, not having a settled team, and, you know, failing to extend some of our star players' contract, thereby creating an unsettled dressing room, which Pochettino has no way of dealing with, short of leaving out those unsettled players. And then, you know, everybody else just not having any desire or passion for the game of football because they're unsettled man babies who only want to get paid money for playing a stupid game. So, you know, whatever.
Okay, Matt Law. Jesus Christ.
No, but you know, seriously, it was it just sucked. Like it wasn't. It was not a good game, and I don't subscribe to, you know, necessarily all of that. But I think it's certainly part of the confluence of weird events that kind of led to this performance.
I mean, the transfer window stuff, which Matt Law was from the Telegraph, was sort of vomiting out earlier today. Is for once, I mean, Levy does leave his business to the last minute. But of the things that hurt us on Sunday, like I don't really subscribe to that. Lo Celso was at the Copa America. So at best, he's in training a week earlier, which probably doesn't make a whole lot of difference. And Sessegnon's hurt. And as for Ndombele, like, we've had that guy on the roster since, like, June or July. So that wasn't really the problem. I don't think transfers is the issue. I mean, maybe if you want to point to transfers, it's that Eriksen's here, still here. Jan hasn't signed an extension. And, you know, whatever drama might be going on with Toby, too. But I don't know. I assume that wasn't as much of an issue, given that we seem to have made our peace with what's going on with Toby a long time ago. And I figured we would carry that attitude through. But maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, I mean, the off-the-field stuff is definitely a contributing factor. I mean, we left Eriksen out of the Villa lineup, and then we left him out again against Newcastle this weekend. You know, I'm convinced we only played him against Man City because even Pochettino realized that we weren't going to get a result without him and figured, you know, he could stick to his principles against Villa and Newcastle. and not give Eriksen a starting job. As for Vertonghen, I honestly have no idea what the hell happened there. There's rumors that he is maybe not at peak fitness, but...
Which I honestly hope are true, because that's a lot easier to stomach than... like.
But then some weird falling out over contract issues. Like, I mean, Vertonghen was a fixture in preseason, and, you know, yes, Davinson Sanchez and Juan Foyth were both at the Copa, and Eric Dyer, I don't even know if he still plays for this team anymore.
No, you're going to know next week, brother.
Yeah, we're about to find out. The thing with Vertonghen just seems to have come out of nowhere. And
yeah, especially because he's not had issues with him before. So this is not like, I mean, we never had a problem with Vertonghen before.
Right, and like, you know, and Pochettino talks about like, well, you know, the best players play, and I'm always going to have to leave somebody out, and there's always going to be a question about who's starting and who's not. We have a lot of good players on this team, and yada, yada, yada. But like, Davinson Sanchez has been just terrible for three games straight now, and didn't have a very good season last year on top of it. So, you know, the argument that Vertonghen is somehow undeserving of a spot because of his on-the-field performances, you know, doesn't really make a lot of sense. There's obviously something happening behind the scenes. And, you know, Vertonghen, like Eriksen and like Toby, is out of contract at the end of the season. It's just that, unlike Eriksen and Toby, his contract issues never seem to be a big deal. You know, we weren't talking about... you know, whether we had to sell or re-sign and lose all the money we might get from a transfer, it all just seemed like a matter of course that Vertonghen was going to stick around. And now all of a sudden, I feel like we have to wonder, is that the case? Is he asking for too much money and he wants to leave and now Pochettino doesn't know how to deal with it? It's very mysterious in a way that, you know, even for a club like Spurs that is plays their cards very close to the vest on stuff like this, it's extra mysterious. And yeah, so those are all contributing factors, certainly.
And that's one of the things that sucks about this to me, is like, we're reduced to this sort of like Kremlinology bullshit when, I don't know, most of the problems I think are pretty apparent, like, with or without them, there's plenty of other problems to discuss, unfortunately. And it's just, it's so annoying that, you know, and you see it with, you know, Matt Law in particular, but a lot of journalists, like, are having these, like, are talking about, oh, well, Tottenham having a good game since Christmas and all this other bullshit. And it just seems like, you know, they're just, we're all trying to divine what the hell's going on behind the scenes when the answer's probably pretty simple, and that a couple big players have not signed renewals and there hasn't been a transfer market for them, so... everybody's disgruntled, and Pochettino's not handling it like a mature adult, so.
I mean, you know, leaving some of the off-the-field stuff aside, the actual on-field performance was actually also very bad. Like, and concerning in a way that the prior two games have also been concerning, where it seems like Spurs did not get the tactics right from the get-go.
I would disagree with that to some extent about Villa. We had problems, but I think that was a game where genuinely we were getting a little bit unlucky.
Well, I mean, Pochettino came out after that game and said verbatim that he got the tactics wrong. So,
I mean, we were creating chances. I mean, we tightened the noose a little, or we, you know, tightened the screws, I guess, a little bit when we put Eriksen on. But, you know, that wasn't like we were, it wasn't like this is all I'm trying to say. It wasn't like this was today. Or Sunday.
I mean, you know, look, I think that these first three games have, you know, a lot in common in the fact that our tactical setups have not made any sense. And which is weird to say, because it seemed like so often down the stretch last year, Pochettino got the tactics exactly right for the matchups, especially in the Champions League. And, you know, we can talk about, you know, Spurs aren't ever really that good in August, or, you know, we didn't have still no Dele Alli, no Ndombele, whatever. But the players that were actually on the pitch and the positions that they were utilized, or the roles that they were utilized in, was also not doing us any favors. You know, Ben hit on Davinson Sanchez earlier, and I mean, you know, we're playing him in this left-sided center back role, where he's obviously not comfortable. And, I mean, he just gets caught ball watching so, so much. And I appreciate that he's a great athlete and that, you know, especially early in his Spurs career, that allowed him to recover from some of these mistakes. But when he's getting caught ball watching at the top of the 18-yard box, he doesn't have space to recover and you know, and make up for that mistake. And I mean, that's just like, that's just basic stuff, like knowing where the runners are, knowing where the center forward is. This isn't, you know, a midfielder making a late run into the box. It's not a winger sneaking in past a fullback. Like, this is just a center forward and a big fucking dude. Like, how are we losing track of him?
Yeah, especially,
inexcusable.
Yeah, especially against this team. Like, I mean, I understand Sissoko probably should have been pressing a little bit and not letting him pick that pass, but, like, come on. It's fucking Newcastle. This team sucks. I mean,
they had a left back come on in their first game and think that he was playing in central midfield for about 10 minutes. Like, that's the level of coordination that this team has. And we couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's get to the tactics, because that's really been the thing, I think, at least the last two games for certain, that Pochettino has just botched from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, he has, in the recent seasons, shown a lot of tactical flexibility and adjustment to injuries and personnel deficiencies, and creating these interesting tactical setups to compensate for that. Like last year, the big story was the quote-unquote air raid offense where, you know, we kind of bypassed midfield, we went long, we hit fast on breaks. And in this match, we're basically playing that kind of air raid offense lineup where we had both Son and Lucas on the pitch, who are guys who are quick and good at moving into space and countering, and Harry Winks and Moses Sissoko in midfield, who are very bad at progressing the play incisively from midfield to our attack. So it seemed like, well, that's what we were going to do again. And instead, we played this very, very stale, possession-oriented game that didn't make any sense with the personnel on the field. You know, Sissoko and Winks did not make hardly any passes to anyone other than the fullbacks and the center backs and the wingers. There was nothing moving the ball up through the gut of Newcastle, through center midfield, and certainly not quickly. You know, every attack was Sissoko to Winks, Winks to a fullback, the fullback to the winger. The winger checks back to the fullback. The fullback passes back to midfield. The midfielder passes to the other midfielder. The midfielder passes to the other fullback. And we're just, like, playing in this, like, slow box going around the outside of Newcastle back and forth until someone decided to throw in a hopeful cross, you know, and hope Lucas Moura could outjump some 6'2" dudes. And that's just not going to win you any games, you know? Especially not once you've already gone down 1-0 on a stupid defensive mistake. And Pochettino just seemed to have no answer for that with the people on the pitch until late in the game, once again, when he had to bring in Christian Eriksen to try and salvage something.
Don't forget Lo Celso, the natural right winger.
Yeah, right. He brought on Lo Celso and stuck him out wide where... Why?
I mean, it's not like, look, arguably you could say it's because Sissoko had defensive responsibilities once Kyle Walker-Peters went off. But, like, come on. Newcastle stopped attacking after, like, the 60th minute. Like, I mean, you know, if we scored a goal or some shit, maybe that's defendable. But it's not defendable in the game that we saw.
We could have put Lo Celso in midfield and left Lamella on and taken Winks off and had an actual winger and let Eriksen, you know, go forward and Lo Celso try and progress the ball from, like, there's other things we could have done. You know, I know we didn't have a ton of attacking options on the bench with Dele injured and so many guys and Dabele injured and
Well, what bothered me is, and I don't know, like, again, I'm outside the club. I don't see what he's like in training. I don't know what his fitness levels are. But if there's ever a match where it's like, yeah, fuck it, throw Lo Celso on. Like, let's see what he can do. Let's let him cook. It's fucking Newcastle. Like, come on. There's no way that could have gone worse than the way it already did. And, like, I don't know. Maybe he's not fit enough to give us 70 minutes. And fair enough if that's true. But he's a good enough player on good enough teams where even if he's not, like, quite in sync with all his teammates, you can let him, like, yeah, like, Son and Kane are going to run on some through balls from you. Like, fucking throw him on. What could it have hurt compared to...
Right. Like, it's not like there was a system that he had to fit into because the system was nothing. You know, we just needed a guy with a little bit of magic who could play a ball to somebody in a dangerous area.
I mean, it's,
like, that's something Lo Celso can do.
He's not in sync with his players yet. I'm sure there are, like, if you were actually in training every day, there might be a valid argument against what I'm saying. But I just think it's worth a risk considering, at least at a minimum, like, yeah, put him on the 55th minute if it's not working. Like,
I mean, the thing for me was, you know, the play was bad, but it was just it was so evident that we just had no idea how to cope with a bunkered defense like that. And it's just like, you know, Ben mentioned like the pattern of play, and it was just like nobody made a quick switch of the ball from one flank to the other. You know, Harry Winks kept taking multiple touches and then making a 10-yard pass to Sissoko.
I don't understand what they thought they were doing with Winks. Like, that's fine if you've got, like, someone who can progress the ball next to him. Okay, he's going to recycle possession, reset the play, provide a little bit in defense. That's fine, but you need somebody next to him to, like, move everything forward. And if Moussa Sissoko is your option, like, buddy, I'm sorry, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not trying to bag on Winks. I don't think he's really, like, the problem. But I think that, you know, the way that he was utilized in this particular game is not the best use of his skills. And, I mean, you know,
those are his skills, man. Like, that's what Winks does, is he does tame recycling of possession and tempo setting. He doesn't make incisive runs and incisive passes. Like, he just doesn't do that.
Right. No, I agree. But I'm just saying, like we, if you are going to play against a bunkered defense, then Moussa Sissoko, who carries the ball forward by dribbling, isn't making any sense, especially when you're doing it up the gut into a packed-in defense that's already playing with three central defenders. You know, and that's what we were trying to do. And then the only progressive pass that Winks or any of the midfielders could make most of the time was to try and jam it into somebody's feet at the top of the 18-yard box and then hope that we got lucky with a little flick or a dummy or something and that we would get it through on goal. And that just wasn't working. There was no width in this team. Honestly, it was weird. Like, I found myself at a certain point being like, I kind of wish Kieran Trippier was here, because then at least you would have had somebody who would post up about, you know, 20 to 25 yards from the end line, all the way on the right touch line, and he would either whip in crosses or he would do quick switches to the other flank, and you know, he would try to get to the end line. Like, I don't know what
Walker I actually Peters thought Walker was Peters was doing some of that. The problem is his dance partner was Moussa Sissoko, who, like, you know, you could just, as soon as he enters the opposition third, you could just hear the gears, like, grinding against each other in his head. It's, you know, that guy's not, oh, he's, it's, it was just a, look, if you're betting on one of Heung-Min Son, Harry Kane, or Lucas Moura is just going to, like, fucking do something at some point and score a goal against Newcastle, like, that's not a smart strategy. It's probably not the worst strategy in the world, but the fact that we didn't have it at a minimum of sort of like, ah, fuck it, this isn't working at 55 minutes, let's try something else. Like, we waited way too long to switch it up. I mean,
Again, my thing is just, like, you have to be prepared for a bunkered defense. And Newcastle's not going to be the only team that does this to us. And, I mean, it's not like this is a new problem for Spurs. It's a problem that we faced for years. And, you know, and we're sitting here talking about, you know, we need people to have, like, moments of magic. Like, we're talking about Lo Celso and Christian Eriksen, and that's to be those sort of magical players that'll play an amazing through ball or hit a, you know, a ridiculous 25-yard shot or whatever it is. When really what we need is we just need a plan. Like, here's how we set up. We whip the ball, you know, side to side, make the defense move, and then, you know, odd man rushes at the back post and cut back. And, like, we just didn't do anything. Well, the plan was
The plan long term is Lo Celso and Ndombele are going to be the plan, but surely we realize we're going to need a backup if those guys aren't ready or aren't fit or whatever. Because, you know, I get it. Like, this isn't like the emperor has no clothes. Spurs don't know what the fuck they're doing long term. We know it's clear there's some sort of a plan going forward. But that they didn't have, they should still be able to assemble a better plan today. I understand that, okay, Eriksen's about to leave. We don't want to rely on him too much. Like, I sort of understand why Pochettino's first instinct is like, I don't want to give this guy starts right now because I don't want the team to get too used to it and we need to start building something else. But, like, if Lo Celso's not ready yet, which Pochettino clearly doesn't think he is, either in terms of fitness or in terms of fit with the team, then, like, fuck it, play Christian Eriksen for the next 2 weeks. Like, you know.
Right, I mean, like, the transition plan from Eriksen is having Ndombele and having Lo Celso in the team to do the things that Eriksen does, and having Dele Alli back in the team being creative and being further forward, and, you know, that he got to be last season and offering that spark in the final third, you know. But we didn't have any of those guys. So what we had was Christian Eriksen, and, like, now is not the time to be planning for a future without Christian Eriksen, because the transition plan didn't exist either. So, you know, you got to suck it up and play the guy who you know can do, you know, the creative things on the pitch. Otherwise, you're just cutting off your nose to spite your face. It's
very
dumb. Who did that serve? Nobody learned anything from this game. You know, this was not a teaching moment. This was just we lost to fucking Newcastle.
Just because we probably could have gotten away with a bad idea doesn't mean that it was a good idea.
I'm like, you know, and again, it's like, this might have worked. As bad as the tactical setup was, as, you know, as naive as we were playing, had we not conceded that opening goal. But again, we put ourselves in a position to concede an opening goal because we weren't playing our good defender. We were playing an out-of-position Davinson Sanchez.
That's true.
Who's been struggling for, like, a year and a half now.
And I always find it much more frustrating. Systemic problems much more frustrating than individual problems. But you're absolutely right. I mean, Sanchez cost us that game. Like you said, who knows? Maybe our dumb strategy works. I mean, if we're not just giving up the world's easiest goal. Like, any of us could have scored that fucking thing if we were on the end of it.
Right, playing Newcastle at 0-0 versus playing Newcastle 1-0 down, it changes the whole complexion of the game. And, like, yes, we're still good enough and Newcastle are bad enough that we should have made goals happen somehow.
Even with that team on the field.
Even with that team on the field. But, like, it's just maddening that Pochettino did us no favors. And, you know, you can point directly to the two guys he's having beef with as being the reason we lost. And that's inexcusable.
Yeah, even if Pochettino is entirely justified to be pissed at these guys, which he might be. I don't know. I'm not in the locker room. I don't know what the source of the beef. Well, I mean, we know what the source of the beef with Eriksen is, but we don't know what's going on with Vertonghen. But the fact of the matter is, he got over himself and swallowed his pride and played Toby Alderweireld all of last year. He's playing him right now. Like, if you can, like, suck it up and learn how to deal with, like, Toby pitching a shit fit and not signing a new contract, then you can, like, figure it out with Vertonghen and Eriksen. Like, unless the issue is, like, Vertonghen just, like, ate too many fucking waffles in the offseason and can't, like, fucking go 60 minutes right now. You know, unless that's what's going on, like, and even if that is what's going on, still play fucking Eriksen. Like, come on. Like, this isn't hard. Ugh.
So, do we want to talk about the penalty?
Sure. Were there two? Obviously,
which
the big one.
One.
The big
yeah,
one
I've
was.
Got a penalty as well, that should have been a penalty, but the big one was Kane.
The big one was Kane. Now, Newcastle defender, Ben, do you remember which one it was? I actually do.
It's Lascelles, wasn't it?
Was it Lascelles? So Lascelles basically falls over Harry Kane in the box. Clearly, I think he was falling over, and then he uses his upper body and arm to obstruct Kane from getting onto a ball, which, like, I don't know if Kane scores that, but if Kane is unobstructed, I think he's absolutely getting a shot on target off. And Mike Dean didn't call it, and when they went to VAR, they didn't call it either, because I think that the Premier League feels some sort of way about VAR, and they don't want to overrule referees unless it is just an absolutely clear cut. No, he did this. Like, you could see the ball touched his hand. Like,
well, I think the thing is you know, if Dean says he saw it and that he, you know, thought it wasn't a penalty, then the bar with whatever it is, clear and obvious error, is impossibly high to clear. Because if you look at that on replay or even in real time, like, that's a penalty. And maybe even last year where we don't have VAR, that's a penalty that gets called. But now, if you're a referee and you're worried about getting overruled, and Mike Dean is a referee that thinks very highly of himself, you're maybe not going to give that. And so that way, if you don't give it, then you set the bar super high the other way to prove you wrong. And I to me, you basically there's no way looking at that that's not a penalty.
We're at a point where I think the only way VAR overturns something is if, like I said, it shows a clear handball that the referee just didn't see. I think that's it. I mean, and
yeah, or like, you know, he just a blatant like slide tackle through the legs that like the referee had a bad angle on or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because what we have right looking... now is. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Dean's looking right at it, and he signals right away that he doesn't think it's a penalty.
Before we continue this about VAR, I do want to point out, especially given like the reaction of a lot of the sort of English journalist class on Twitter as it was going on, and this is the kind of like fair play bullshit that doesn't get called as a penalty all the time in England. So I think it's worth pointing out, this might not have gotten called as a penalty anyway, but...
I don't know, man.
Here's my concern with VAR is that referees on the pitch know that they have the video review as a backstop, right? They know if they get it wrong, it's there to correct things. And so the referee can err on the side of caution and not call a penalty, not give a red card, not give the offsides. You know, with offsides specifically, the edict has been, if it's marginal, let them play, and then we'll pull it back and review it if a goal happened or something. And I think that's what we're seeing is marginal penalties are happening and refs are saying, well, I'm not going to call this. We'll just play it out. And, you know, if a rebound falls to Son in the box and he scores it, then no harm, no foul. And if there is a potential foul, we'll go look at it with the replay and replay will overturn it if it was the right decision. Okay. But standard overturning it is so high right now that it's this clear and obvious error that a marginal penalty call that should be called on the pitch is now not getting called on the pitch, and then the fact that it wasn't being called on the pitch is now used as evidence for why that call shouldn't be overturned, which is completely
your initial description of the system is, if it worked that way, it would actually be, I wouldn't actually mind it if the referees were a little more cautious and they were fine with being like, oh, we just looked at it. Yeah, that was offsides. Bring it back. Or, you know, oh, yep, that was a penalty. Like, let's go. Like, you know, that one, I don't think that would be a problem if that's how it was actually managed.
It has to be willing to counterman the ref. Otherwise, it's just excusing the ref for not calling anything.
I mean, I understand it too. If it's like really borderline and they're just going to defer to what the ref saw on the field because it's not super obvious in replay, that's fine too. But, like you said, we can't have this ridiculously high standard for everything.
Right. And as loath as I am to acknowledge that this person made a good point, Duncan Castles pointed out on Twitter that the FA's actual like mandate for Premier League referees is that they can't avoid making calls in order to allow VAR to sort things out down the road. What they have to do is they have to actually make a determination, like foul, no foul. And then it's the VAR barrier to, or the VAR has to then clear the bar based on that decision. So in that instance, Mike Dean has made the decision no foul. He hasn't avoided calling something and then is waiting for the video referee to call. He's made the decision no foul, and then we now have to go.
I just don't think it would be. I know we're Spurs fans and we're invested in this particular call, but like, yeah. I don't think it would have been wild if like I wouldn't have been mad at Mike Dean or the VAR system, if that happened to another team. I mean, if Arsenal did that to us, I'd be mad. But, like, you know, if that happened and it was like Mike Dean didn't see it on the pitch, because I could understand it, he tripped and he just got in Kane's way and Kane, you know, whatever. That wasn't intentional. And then you look at the replay and it's like, oh, no, wait, that was, like, he's pushing his body into Kane and he's knocking him with his arm. Like, I don't think it would have been a problem if, like, oh, yeah, Mike Dean didn't see it right there, but the bar caught it, and, like, yeah, it's a fucking penalty.
I mean, I just think, so,
Brian,
I mean,
I think you're right that, you know, it can go the other way. He could have just called a penalty on the pitch, and then VAR would look at it and say, well, it's not clear and obvious that it wasn't a penalty, so your call will stand. And right. I think that has it set up, that's how it's nominally supposed to work. But I think the reality is that's not how it's working. Right. I think refs are treating it like a backstop to bail them out. And, you know, when I remember in MLS, and I don't know if this is the case in the World Cup or wherever else VAR has been used, but in MLS, a VAR review would involve the referee going off the pitch and looking at a monitor and watching the replay, and he would review his decision himself. And that's not what we're doing in the Premier League.
Well, apparently the Premier League is expressly trying to avoid that.
Right, and I think that's a problem because mm-hmm. now, if we're saying VAR has to defer to the referee's judgment and we don't want to undermine the referee on the field, then not allowing the referee the benefit of that review is what's the point of VAR then?
Well, and if you're
the
like
referee isn't going to take another look and say, oh, you know what? I saw this in real time and I thought it wasn't a penalty, but now that I'm seeing what happened with a much better angle, I see that it is a penalty. I'm going to change my mind. You know, it doesn't make any sense. There's just too many cooks in the kitchen here.
Yeah, because what are those conversations like in the ear? The guy from Stokely Park is like, I don't know, Mike, he fucking like dove into his legs. And he's like, no, I saw it. He tripped and it's all incidental contact, just shoulder to shoulder. And you go, I don't know. I think that maybe this is a penalty. And he goes, no, you're wrong. And then.
Well, I think the way it works is the guy would say like, ooh, Mike, I think you better take another look at that. Like, you know, he's like, nope, I saw it shoulder to shoulder. And it's like, are you sure? I think you might want to take a look. And I think if the ref just is like, nope, not, like, I don't think, you know. I think they need to have a good working relationship that clearly doesn't exist.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not the reason why we lost.
It's stupid. So, it would have been nice to, it would have been nice to salvage something with that. And, you know. It did happen.
I mean, the thing is like, we could have very easily not gotten that penalty, you know, in a season where VAR doesn't exist. So, you know, I mean, this is – weird refereeing decisions happen all the time. But, you know, it's just like now we have a system in place, and it's just like the system should, like, work a little bit, or there should be, like, some explanation of why it didn't in this instance.
Right. Bad calls are always going to happen. You're always going to have bad refereeing decisions that you're going to complain about. But having a system that is ostensibly there – to, if not fix that problem, at least mitigate it somewhat, and you see it just applied in such a way that makes a total mockery of it, it's like, well, why are we even doing this?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting clear and obvious errors on things that are people offside by millimeters, but you're not getting clear and obvious errors on, you know, this or, you know, a player stamping on another player or whatever.
Right.
Well, at least this wasn't like a dumb game that we only lost because of that. So
yeah,
we could be rightly mad at Pochettino.
Yeah, I mean, and the players. The players were bad.
Yes, yes.
I mean, Harry Kane, I feel like, had 5 touches in the first half. I mean, the man was invisible. And
he had 7 in the second.
And, like, you know, normally we've seen Kane get frustrated with lack of service and drop deep and try to make things happen. And for whatever reason, like, that didn't happen this match. And this was one of the few matches where it seemed like it would have been a really good idea because we had both of our auxiliary forwards in Lucas and Son on the pitch. And we know they're both capable of playing ahead of Kane and allowing him to playmake a little bit behind them. And it definitely would have been nice to see Harry dropping a little further into midfield and getting on the ball and releasing those guys.
I think he did it a little bit.
Maybe drawing a center back with him.
I think he did it a little bit, but it was too late. It was like he started getting back and trying to make things happen, and it just wasn't working. Nothing was working. It was so bad. Everyone was invisible. Like, I don't even know who man of the match would be. Like, Kyle Walker-Peters, I guess, because he was having a nice match till he went off. Like, probably not. I mean, I just, like, I don't get mad when I think about him, so.
Yeah, nobody. I mean, honestly, Sissoko was fine. You know, he had a fine Sissoko performance.
No,
he wasn't good.
But he was part of the problem. Like, he was just, he would do the same fucking thing he did against City. He'd have this really nice run, sort of go up the pitch and go through some guys, and then he would just, like, make the dumbest pass possible. He had one or two nice crosses in the match. Like, you know, he didn't, it wasn't, like, totally without end product, but it was just, you know, it was the same.
He was better as a right back than he was as a midfielder.
And he would just, like, dribble into these cul-de-sacs, lose the ball, kill an attack. I mean, it was just, like, I think I understand how Pochettino wants to use Harry Winks this year. And I think there's actually a good role for that. I think you could see against Villa, like, what he was sort of trying to do. But you need an outlet next to him, and an outlet that's not going to just, like, dribble it into a wall, which is what Sissoko does. Like, he's not creative enough, especially against the bunkered-in defense. And, you know, he's most effective against these teams that are actually playing us a little bit because he clogs up their midfield. I mean, that when he's actually being good, he's, like, you know, throwing his body around, getting in the way, you know, moving it, making simple passes to other people. But, like, you know, when they're all hanging back.
He can break and transition and run back the other way, you know, when they're committed forward, which just never happened again.
Yeah, there's no transition, especially once they score.
Running very fast, I got at eight guys who are sitting behind the ball. I'm like, that's never going to do anything.
And you know what? I even would have been fine if, like, at halftime he pulls him off and throws a Celso on because, like, okay, well, this was the plan, but that's not going to work because they don't need to transition anymore. You know, at least maybe they would have to, like, do a little bit of that if it was a 0-0 game. But, oh, God, it was just, Jesus, it was such a frustrating match. And now I'm getting even more frustrated talking about it now than I was watching it.
Yeah, it was a rough one.
So, Ben, how concerned are you by this? I mean, in terms of, like I said, a lot of these problems are going to be solved long-term just by sort of guys getting healthy and guys getting acclimated to the team. So, I mean, in some ways it's not horribly concerning to me, but in other ways it's still, like, at a minimum puzzling that, you know, like, that's still a bunch of bad decisions our team made, both in terms of, like, individual players and as Pochettino as a manager on that match.
Well, I think there's a few things, right? You know, I would say our big problem this match was we lacked any kind of incisive progressive passing or incisive progression in any capacity, dribbling or otherwise, from midfield to transition to attack to open up the defense. And, you know, right now we have four guys on our team who are good at that. Ndombele, who was injured, Lo Celso, who's not ready, Dele Alli, who's injured, and Christian Eriksen, who knows what's going on with him. You know, those are the four guys, and that's a lot of guys to have who can do this sort of thing. And none of them, for various reasons, were ready to start that game. And, you know, adding one of them into the equation, let alone three or four of them, would have dramatically changed, you know, how we played. And so, in terms of how worried am I would say not very, because we still have all of these guys to come back into the team, or at least three of them to come back in the team as we sell Christian Eriksen. And I think that's going to fix a lot of our problems, if not all of our problems, honestly.
So do you think this is just him making a dumb bet with, like, which, honestly, I think it's worth pointing out, as I said earlier, like, this, as dumb as this was, it kind of works out most of the time, probably. Like, you know, Son's in a little bit better shape. You know, Lucas gets lucky. A ball falls to Kane, or he gets fouled, and, you know, shit just starts clicking. Even with the bad decisions we make, usually this kind of thing works out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yes, I think, you know, again, we could have won this match, but I don't think we're going to have to see a lineup that looks like this very often, if ever. I think we are always going to have at least one of those three guys, if not more of them, on the pitch at a given time. And I think that will make a world of difference to just our general style of play. And so I'm not overly concerned by it. What I am a little concerned by is Pochettino not recognizing that he lacked those guys and needed to use the players he had in such a way as to compensate for that, as he did last season with that air raid offense. You know, I mean, even without that, you could play a very similar, you could play the exact same personnel and put those guys in like a 4-4-2 diamond with Lamella and Sissoko kind of shuttling in front of Harry Winks and Harry Kane at the tip of the diamond with Son and Lucas as our forwards. And I think, you know, just that slight tactical tweak would have given us a lot more ability to open up a defense because, you know, we know Harry Kane is a good playmaking attacker. You know, having Lamella and Sissoko both shuttling from deep gives you two guys who are good at running with the ball and Lamella, at least, making decent passes in an open field, you know, with a defense in front of him. And I think we could have made that work. But what we did was, and this is, you know, going to be hard to hear for you, especially Greg, is really exposed how limited Eric Lamella is as a player in 2019.
Yeah.
I think we all value what a try-hard he is and, you know, his aggressive tackles and his pointy elbows. But, you know, he was really charged with being the creative fulcrum of a side with three forwards ahead of him. And he was just not up to that task.
The only thing he seems to be doing really well is this, like, I'm going to pick a ball off of you. And, I don't know.
He does a thing where, like, he'll pick the ball up and then he'll make, like, a nice diagonal run across the middle of the field. And it's a weird way to move. And so things open up as defenders try and track that diagonal run. And then he can find, like, a short ball. And, you know, as the number 10, he can't really do that because he is just picking up the ball way too close to the 18-yard box where they're all bunkered in. But you put him a little deeper in midfield, and, you know, suddenly that skill set's a little more valuable. Or, you know, you put another creative passer like Eriksen or Ndombele in midfield, and, you know, someone can find him on those little runs, and maybe he can do something in the final third. But Eric Lamella is not and will never be the guy for Tottenham Hotspur. Like, he is our Jesse Lingard. He is a useful cog in a machine. He is not a guy that anybody wants dictating anything about how you're going to play. Because he's just incredibly limited.
Especially, at least at this point in his career.
It's not like a point in his career where he's going to get better.
I meant maybe this is something he could have done a few years ago when he was healthy, but not anymore. So as we look at this team coming out of this game, we'll get into Arsenal in a second, but I don't know, there's a lot of doom and gloom in the papers and just sort of amongst Spurs fans, and a lot of this is just, I think a lot of this is overreaction. I think especially amongst some of the journalist class, they're complaining about the way the team's set up, but not in the way that, like, you were talking about, Ben. They're more complaining about, like, the players we signed this window, which seems to be a very dumb thing to say right now, if you're asking me. But just, like, Brian, you look at this. Are you, like, I mean, you look at all the sort of, like, I mean, Pochettino's saying this shit in press conferences, and I never know how seriously to take what Pochettino says in a press conference. But are you concerned about, like, sort of where the club's heading or what's going on at the Spurs right now? Or are you just like, you know what, we had two shitty results and guys aren't integrated yet and, like, we'll figure this out sooner or later?
No, I'm not concerned. I mean, you know, look, we talked about this after the window closed, and yes, would we have liked to have tied up some of the loose ends with, like, Alderweireld and Vertonghen and Eriksen? Sure, of course. And would we have liked to have addressed some of our fullback situation? Yep, absolutely. And maybe do we need a backup striker? Or, you know, look, we could talk about all the stuff we could have done and all the money we could have spent. But I think the team as constructed now is fine. It's just a matter of utilizing the players that we have, playing our guys in a system that makes sense, and just getting the new players, like you said, properly integrated. I'm not trying to be all doom and gloom about this season. I think we're still fine. I think, you know, I don't think the City result, you know, the performance isn't
great, but the result is actually good. And, you know, Newcastle, we always blow some stupid game somewhere. So
we actually haven't beat Newcastle at home since 2013. And I know they spent a few of those years in the championship, but still.
So, you know, like, maybe this is just, like, our shitty August for the, what, fourth or fifth season running. Like, okay. You know, I'm still very confident that at the end of the year, we will be the third best team in the league. And, you know, I didn't think that we were going to be within touching distance of the top two. These last two results haven't changed my mind on that. I still think there's a big gap between us and then the other teams that are chasing top four. So I'm not wasting a lot of time being overly concerned about the future of this team.
You don't look at the results we've had since Christmas, let's say, and that doesn't give you pause, just to be devil's advocate here?
No, because, and I mean, like, look, I mean, everybody saw the stuff floating around on Twitter, and I think, what was it? It was like 4 wins and 8 losses and a bunch of, only a handful of draws because we were undrawables.
It was like in our last 15, 20 games, we are the 18th best team in the Premier League.
And I mean, you know, like, I mean, that pretty much meshes with how I felt like we played down the stretch last year, but like, down the stretch, we still finished third in the Premier League. Fourth, because Chelsea pipped us on the last day of the season. Because we played like shit.
But a lot of that's, I mean, again, it's context. It's like a lot of that's injuries. A lot of that is, I think a ton of that is us selling out for the Champions League.
Right, and that's the other thing. Like, that's another thing that statistic discounts. Like, okay, yes, I understand that the last 15 league games or whatever since December in the league, not great. But in the Champions League, pretty fucking good. You know, like,
I mean, to be real devil's advocate here, like, were we pretty fucking good in the Champions League, or did we pull a lot of rabbits out of a lot of hats?
I think those are both true. I think those are both true.
Both be true, yeah.
I think we played really well against City until Sissoko got hurt, and then we just had a rear guard action that worked. And, you know, I think it's still a credit. Even though it was, like, not great, I think it was still a credit to the team that they'd won that fucking game. Just like last week, it's a credit that we got a draw out of that, even though we really didn't deserve it.
We pretty much wiped the floor with Dortmund.
We had, like, a bad to mediocre game against Ajax when we were hurt as shit. And then after giving up an early goal against Ajax in the away leg, we wiped the floor with them for the rest of the match. And frankly, they were lucky it took us till the last second to put us ahead, considering how badly we were whipping their ass. I mean, you know, it's all relative. I mean, we made the fucking Champions League final, and it didn't work out like how we wanted it to, but, I mean, I think Pochettino's got some things to figure out, and frankly, some of these things aren't as bad as they looked at the time. I mean, he's hurt now, so who the fuck knows what's going to happen with him, but, like, I have been nothing but impressed with Kyle Walker-Peters so far this year. And if this is the kind of form we can expect for him, then Pochettino deserves a lot of credit for just sticking with that guy, whether that is by circumstance or by choice, I don't know which, but he, you know, that's working out really well. Ndombele has been pretty fucking good in what we've seen of him this year. I mean, Kane looked healthy again, even if we're not using him properly so far this year. I mean, there are a lot of things to be positive about with this team, and I think once Lo Celso is integrated and we can sort of move past this transfer window, I think we'll be looking real good, at least eventually. But it's a little annoying. Like, you know, sitting through a game like this weekend isn't a lot of fun, especially after two games that maybe weren't the most fun to watch, even if those were much more understandable than this one.
I don't know. I just don't think it's a beneficial use of our time to be super concerned about, like, where the squad will be in December. I looking at the teams around us, there is no way that we have a prolonged, like, actual shitty spell.
So, here's the question then. We have the North London Derby next week against Arsenal. If we shit the bed and play like we did in the last two matches against Arsenal and they walk us off the park, are we concerned then? Do we suddenly feel less confident about being better than the chasing pack?
I think it depends on how the game goes.
still able. I mean, let's just say we get our asses beat.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a problem. If Ndombele's healthy and it's not because they're exposing us down our injured right flank, you know, then that's something worth being concerned about. If we give up a stupid goal because we have to play Sissoko at right back, then, you know, that's something to be a little less concerned about. I honestly have no idea. I don't think Arsenal's looked terribly impressive so far this year, but they've managed to avoid, you know, a major black eye or a major unpredictable black eye, because I think, you know, losing to Liverpool is nothing to be too ashamed about. But, you know, they managed to find a way to win their first two games, even though I think pundits have been overrating how impressive they've been. I don't think Pepe's looked terrible. I mean, knock on wood, and he's going to kick our ass now, but the guy looks like he knows how to dribble and do nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, Danny Ceballos looked pretty ordinary against Liverpool after everybody thinking that he was going to be amazing after his performance against
Burnley.
Yeah, Burnley. And David Luiz was David Luiz. So, you know, I mean, if we just go out there and it's like the 4-0 that United put on Chelsea or something like that, I don't know. Maybe I have to revisit my opinion, I guess. But I still am broadly confident that this team, when we are healthy and we've been playing together a little bit longer, is fine.
I don't know. Losing a big high-profile match, either deservedly or undeservedly, feels right before an international break. That feels very us, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no, it would be very typical of us. But, I mean, this is just one where Pochettino has to get his tactics right. Like, for the first time this season, he has to put out the right starting 11 with the right plan,
yes,
like, from the beginning of the game.
Yes.
And, I mean, are we confident in him doing that? I mean, I think, broadly speaking, he deserves the benefit of the doubt, and that we think that I personally would say that he could do that. Based on the evidence so far this season, I could understand if you were like, no, I think he's going to screw it up again. But,
I mean, there's no good choices at right back. We're probably going to play Aurier or Sissoko, so that's not, I mean, I don't know how serious. We're recording this on Monday night in America, and we haven't gotten any reports on Kyle Walker-Peters, but I can't imagine he's going to be ready for the weekend. So that's going to be a problem, but we should still be able to, like you said, Brian, there's plenty of players. Even if he thinks Lo Celso still needs to be on the bench, as long as, like, Ndombele is healthy, like, we should be able to, like, really take it to him with the guys we have. But he needs to get his tactics right. We can't do this. I'm not expecting the same shit we saw against Newcastle, but we can't do something like that again.
Right. And, I mean, ironically, the team we played against Newcastle is going to be much better suited to playing against Arsenal than it was against Newcastle. The other option at right back is apparently Eric Dier has been training at right back.
Oh, God.
With Foyth's injury. So that's something we could see.
I mean, Dyer's played right back in the Premier League before. Not horrendously.
Yeah. He won Pochettino's very first game against West Ham.
If I had any confidence in his fitness, I would feel like all right about that as an emergency option. But, I mean, I don't know. That guy looks like it seems like his fitness isn't there. At least that's what the rumors are saying. It doesn't seem like he's exiled as much as just not ready. And given the fact that he had to have some surgery in the offseason, that doesn't seem like a he was being lazy thing and more just a, you know, he's not ready yet. But, fuck, who knows?
Think we'll see Ben Davies?
Probably.
Danny Rose has been very bad.
Yeah.
I would not be shocked.
Yep. I mean, weirdly enough, like, Davies would have been more suited to a team like Newcastle. I think Rose is always better against a team like Arsenal because he can get on his bike and get back there. But, you know, Davies is the kind of guy where you just want him, like, up the pitch, like, distributing balls. And, you know, defending's not really that important. So.
Yeah, then we brought him on for the last 10 minutes.
And it helps. If we didn't make anything happen, we looked a little bit better, though.
The other bit of injury news is Dele Alli is fit to play. We don't know if that means fit to start yet or fit to be on the bench.
I would imagine he's bench.
Probably going to start on the bench. But.
Yeah. But that's a nice option to have. I don't know. I mean, I think we've had three matches this year, and I think you can have serious qualms with what Pochettino's done in two of them. Maybe one of them, depending on how forgiving you are about how we played City. But still, no, it's...
I'm less forgiving about City than I am about Newcastle.
Yeah, it's frustrating, though, and I don't know, like, it's Arsenal. I really want to fucking beat this Arsenal team, especially because I'm sick of people talking about how they're good or something this year, when I think they've been incredibly unimpressive.
Yeah, I mean, they look terrible against Newcastle and barely won that game, so...
Yeah, imagine. Well, oh, imagine look, that.
We yeah, weird how that works. I mean, you know, like, I think Arsenal probably, broadly speaking, are fine as well. I think, but they just have way more other issues. I still don't think their midfield's figured out. I still don't think much of their defense. Their attack is scary, though. If Emery puts, like, all the right players out there. They seem weirdly committed to playing Joe Willock for a lot of minutes, though, as opposed to having both Aubameyang and Lacazette on the field at the same time.
I have no idea how this match is going to go. Like, I'd probably feel better about it if we'd, like, just farted our way to a win that we didn't deserve, but which wouldn't have made any sense that I'd feel better about it, but... I don't know. I just don't feel good about it. But I never feel good about it going into a high-profile match because I just get nervous.
Yeah, and it feels like these North London derbies are always, like, right about this time. Like, it's always either right before or right after the first international break of the season.
Yep.
Like, when was the last time we had, like, a North London derby in, like, November in the league? Like, I don't remember.
I guess what concerns me a little bit is I feel like Emery really had Pochettino's number in the North London derbies last year. And, you know, we got kind of lucky in the second one, although I don't think they had nearly as much success. And obviously that was when we were so hurt, every game was a rear guard action. But I don't know. Well, that's two games.
If I recall correctly, the way that Emery kind of had Pochettino's number was Emery made tactical changes early in both those games. In that he made, I think in the first game of the season, in the first North London derby of the season, he made two subs at halftime.
Yep.
And then changed the system up, and then we didn't have an answer for it. And, you know, as we know, Pochettino doesn't make subs before, like, the 62nd minute. And so, I mean, if Emery is going to be the more proactive manager and, you know, adjust his game plan to the extent it needs adjusting, then, you know, we might be in trouble.
Who knows? I mean, it's not like we have a long track record of them fighting each other, of them facing each other. Actually, we probably do, and I just don't know how he played against Sevilla and Valencia when he was in Spain. But just shows how well-researched we are here on Wheeler Dealer Radio.
Always overly prepared, really.
Exactly, exactly. That's why we get the big bucks. I don't know. It just, man, I'll feel better if we can pull a big win out. I mean, I'll always feel better if we can beat Arsenal, but it'll just soothe my jangled nerves, especially if we hear that Ndombele's healthy and Kyle Walker-Peters is healthy and, you know, everybody, and Dele's healthy and everybody's just ready to play.
We'll see.
Well, I think it's time to wrap it up. Ben, do you have any final thoughts on Spurs this week?
Yeah, I think we were terrible, and I really would like us to be less terrible.
That is a bold take. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
Brian, any final thoughts for this week?
We should try to beat Arsenal. That's my final thought, yeah.
Another bold take. Kind of piercing analysis people come to Wheelie Dealer Radio for. Where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y.
And you can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. We never asked for this before, but if you're still listening, that means you probably like us. So please leave us some reviews on iTunes if you get a chance. It really helps when people find us. And you know, really soothes my ego. And, you know, Brett Rainbow might pull a sponsorship of the podcast if we don't get our ratings up. Also, we're available on Spotify now. So if you prefer to listen to us that way.
Wait, are we really?
Yeah, we are. At least we should be.
Big time.
Yeah, I know. Now I just have to be lazy. Now I have to stop being lazy and do this paperwork for Stitcher.
How many hoops did we have to jump through to get
Oh,
on the
like
spot?
None. Like none. It was so easy. I was I'm just incredibly lazy and a poor steward of this podcast. So, yeah, so listen to us wherever. Please leave us some reviews. And for Brian, for Ben, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I'm your host, Greg. And come on, you Spurs.